We need to take you back, though, to one of the great music venues of all time that closed 50 years ago this month. Give a listen. Sly and the Family Stone live at the Fillmore East. And our next guest is going to tell us more about that. He is a music promoter, songwriter, impresario, and all-around good guy, Kenjamin Franklin. Joining us, Ken, good afternoon.
Hey there, Rich. Thanks for having me aboard the magical airwaves of Z62.
Well, it's so great to have you with us and to talk about a venue that is indeed legendary. Hard to believe that the Fillmore was only open for about 3 years.
That's very true. From March of 68 to June 27th, 1971. As I say, you know, where everyone speaks about Woodstock, that was 3 days of music and mud, and the Fillmore East was 3 years of music and magic. It really, truly was.
What was it in Bill Graham's mindset that enabled him to be so successful with both the Fillmore East and Fillmore West? At number one, getting an unbelievable assortment of talent, but also often featuring people before they were on the radar of a lot of music folks.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rich. Well, I think it sums up in two words: taking chances. Bill always took chances. He didn't want to play the mainstream card in anything he did. And so that's how it all went down. As a matter of fact, there probably wouldn't have been a Woodstock without Bill Graham. Most of those bands that played Woodstock originated out of the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West. And even your friend Ed Berensford, Chipmunk, was the lighting director of the Fillmore East. As Bill was known for just hiring the greatest talent there was to work behind the stages and so forth.
Well, that's part of the story, too, of Fillmore East, not just the amazing music, but light shows that were way ahead of their time.
Oh, absolutely. That's right. That was Bill realizing that he wanted to give the audience a show, not just the music, but everything around it, even the concessions, as he was known to sell yogurt and bagels and organic food at the time, which was unheard of. I mean, everything, he took great pride in making sure that everything was high class. They even had a program. Every concert, you would get, it was like a Broadway show production. You would have an actual program that had articles about the bands and so forth. So it was really a magical time. And when Bill finally decided to close the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West, one of the things that he stated about why he was closing them is because the managers, the people that were representing the bands at the time, they were kind of forcing Bill to package the show the way they wanted it.
Right.
Bill would take chances, and like when he brought in Led Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin opened up for the Woody Herman Big Band Orchestra. But then when things changed and the managers of these big bands had more of a say in the matter, they kind of made it so that Bill couldn't package the shows the way he wanted to. And that was really the magic of the Fillmore East, the way he would put these triple bills together, the eclectic mixture of bands and singer-songwriters and so forth, and lots of women talent, and Nina Simone's and the Joni Mitchells, and an all-female group called Fanny that recorded with Barbra Streisand on one of her albums. So he was all over the music map of just doing it his way, which was really the right way.
And people may not remember, among all those classic acts, among other things, The Who's Tommy premiered not on a big stadium tour somewhere, but at the Fillmore East.
That's very true. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those bands got their start on the stages of the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West. Absolutely.
And it became
a lot of the bands and performers of color.
Right.
Miles Davis performed at the Fillmore East. Ray Charles, Lying the Family Stone, who you played, Chambers Brothers, the voices of East Harlem. It just went on and on as far as the eclectic mix of black, white. Rabbi Shankar performed at the Fillmore East. It was just, you know, Bill did it his way, and it really worked quite nicely, as opposed to what's going on in the world of radio and mainstream TV and so forth. They really could have taken some lessons from what Bill and his concepts of half a century ago.
And it became a magnet for performers and artists. And I was reading about one of the many legendary shows there when Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention one night came out for an encore and, oh, had a couple of guests with them, John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
That's true. And the Grateful Dead brought on, I believe, the Beach Boys to jam with them. Bill, you know, he was known to say that he was in the concert business to do two things, entertain and educate. And that's what he did. A matter of fact, there's a story that I read recently that when Jimi Hendrix finished his set one time at the Fillmore East, he was backstage with Bill Graham, and Jimmy asked Bill, "Hey, what do you think of my show?" And Bill said, "I liked it, but I didn't love it." And Jimmy said, "Why not?" He goes, "Because you played all your hits, and you didn't bother to play any of those blues songs that got you to this place and time."
Wow, that is a great story. Ken Franklin with us here on Downtown. Well, one of the reasons you're here, Ken, is to tell us a little bit more. You did a lengthy series of interviews with a woman who really captured the story of Fillmore East, and her name is Amalie Rothschild. Can you tell us a little bit about how those interviews came to be and where people might be able to access them?
Right. Well, thanks for asking, Rich. Well, what it was is Amalie was hired to be a staff photographer at the Fillmore East, and with her camera, she captured many magical moments of Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, The Who. I mean, the list goes on and on as to who she photographed. And when the Fillmore closed, she, well, I think like maybe 10, 20 years after the fact, put out a book, a coffee table book, with many of her photographs. And when I got hold of the book, I said, oh, she's someone I have to interview, because at the time, back in the last decade, I was doing some video podcasting projects that really never went anywhere. I shot all this video, and I just put it in a file and kind of forgot about it. And then when I realized that it was the 50th anniversary of the closing night at the Fillmore East, which Amalie, of course, took photographs of, I thought it would be great to roll out this 12-part series that I originally recorded videotaped in 2009. And so starting tonight at 8 p.m., we're going to roll out part one. And we'll end the 12-part series on the closing night anniversary on June 27th. It's just a pretty interesting look into the backstage of the Fillmore East, as told by Amalie and her photograph.
And how can people access
that? You could probably watch it. For now, we're building up a website that will have a bunch of interviews that I've been involved with recently. But for now, I guess the two ways that it could be accessed is by going to facebook.com/muchmusic. Or you could send me an email directly at fillmore@radiotv.com. But in the near future, we will have an actual website up that will give access to all these interviews.
Now, I have to ask you about this, because you've been a great resource for us and a great friend to the show, and setting up any number of interesting guests for us to talk to over the years. But I need to know more about this. You were telling me that for a while, Billy Preston was a neighbor of yours.
That's very true. I was living at 77 West 55th Street, and my first neighbor, I was in apartment 18K, and my neighbor in 18B was Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, and I got to speak with him several times. And then after Keith left the building, he brought in his friend, one of the like fifth members of the Beatles, Billy Preston, to be the neighbor, until Billy got thrown out because he got a little carried away late at night with parties and so forth. But yeah, I had two pretty interesting neighbors at the time in the last century.
I would say so. Now, and what was your first really big step into the music industry when you were promoting Frankie and the Knockouts?
Well, I actually started a few years before that, actually a decade earlier, back in '77, when I was hired, right when I was doing interviews in college radio with the likes of Fleetwood Mac and Harry Chapin and so forth. I was asked to come out to Texas and work on commercial radio back in the late 70s. So I really got my start in commercial radio after doing college radio in Texas radio, and then was doing radio in New York City. But yeah, in 1981, I was hired by Jimmy Einer, the well-known producer and music executive, who actually executive produced the Dirty Dancing soundtrack. Mm. And I was hired to promote Frankie and the Knockouts, their first two albums, as well as Don McLean, that I believe you had on your show.
We have indeed.
Yeah, we had a hit single with him doing the Roy Orbison cover, Crying, and Bruce Colburn, who I think you also interviewed. We
yes.
had a big hit with Bruce with Wondering Where the Lions Are.
You've done it all, my friend. And you were just a kid. I'm thinking 1977. You're above my age. You're just a youngster back then.
I sure was. But, you know, I have to give thanks to really Bill Graham, because on that closing night concert on Sunday, June 27th, 1971, as a middle school student, I had my tape recorders going and recorded all, like 9 hours of the closing night at the Fillmore East with the Allman Brothers and Mountain and Jay Giles Band, Beach Boys. And when I heard that concert, I'm saying, I think I have a place in the music business at some point in time. But, Rich, I have to really give thanks to you, because with the state of mainstream radio as it is today, you have been a great supporter of a lot of the talent that I work with and in the interviews you do. And you really are like a Bill Graham of the interview on radio, because you just do such a great eclectic mix of guests. And I really appreciate what you've been doing for us.
Well, we're glad to be working with you as always. And I look forward to seeing the interviews with Amelie Rothschild talking about the glory days of one of the great rock venues of all time, the Fillmore East, celebrating and recalling the 50th anniversary of it closing the doors in late June 1971. Hey, Ken, great to talk with you as always, my friend. We appreciate you making a little time for us, and we'll do it again down the road.
Well, thanks so much, and because you guys are so good, you and Carrie will get a box of beignets from Ratner's, which was next door to the Fillmore East.
Carrie's ears perked up at that. Fantastic. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys.